Okay, it's episode 4 of the Back to Front show. My name's Kieran Whittaker, and once again, as per the last 3 episodes, I'm joined by Mr. Kieran Mosterton over in Wales. How are you, Kieran?
Hello, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I was obviously it's Masterton, but my iPhone always refers to you as Mosterton.
Mosterton, and your daughter does, in fact, doesn't she?
She does, although she doesn't talk about you that much.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, don't start thinking you're the principal male figure in her life, then, Kieran.
That would be wrong. Dream of it.
So we're also joined by the sound of your fire this week.
Yes.
It's too cold in the study this week, so you've relocated down to the...
That's right. It's too cold in the Mosterton study, so I'm downstairs with the dog and an open fire.
Dog, yes. Your small-scale dog.
Yeah.
What is
he? Just
a
wee one. He's a golden doodle.
A golden doodle.
Half poodle, half retriever.
Yeah. Labradoodle.
No.
No.
That'd be a Labrador and a poodle.
Okay. But hey, listen. Big news this week. We actually have a show sponsor, show supporter in the shape of Handheld Conference, which is happening.
It's exciting.
It is very exciting. Run by Mr. Craig Lockwood. That's happening in Cardiff, UK, on November 27th and 28th. I believe there's a full track of talks and some workshops as well. And tickets go on sale on March 1st at 10 a.m. That's UK time. Yeah. And we've got a giveaway. We've been talking, well, for at least 5 minutes, trying to figure out the best way to give away a ticket to this conference in November.
Over-engineering.
We have, yeah. We've taken the developer's approach and thought of the most complicated way to do a giveaway and still haven't managed to come up with a solution. But we'll tell you a little bit more about that in a moment. But So I was lucky enough to actually speak at the inaugural, that's a very difficult word to say,
inaugural. Yeah.
Handheld conference last year and had a great time. For some reason, Craig decided to put me on first. So,
oh, nice, kind of him.
Yeah, I think I was like the warm-up act, you know, just to get the stragglers in and then let the big guns loose, which was probably fair enough, to be honest. But this year, they've arranged some amazing people, flown in a few people from the States. We've got Mr. Zeldman.
Yes, Jeffrey himself.
Mr. Jeffrey Zeldman, yeah. Mark Bolton, Sarah Parmenter, Jeremy Keith, Mr. Dan Rubin, who's back on the speaking circuit this year, Naomi Atkinson, John Hicks, Ling Valentine, Sid Lawrence, and Eddie, and I'm probably going to pronounce his name wrong, for which I do apologise. How would you say that? Machado? Yeah. Yeah. And taking place on Europe's biggest stage as well, apparently.
Really?
Hmm. And there's going to be bands and all sorts. It's going to be a great day. I'm looking forward to it very much. It's quite an easy sell for me. It's only about an hour on the train.
Yes, not bad, is it?
Which makes a big difference. And tickets on sale March the 1st. The first 150 are only £99 plus VAT.
Bargain.
Which is a steal, really.
It is, yeah.
I think the regular price is £139 plus VAT. So if you fancy going along, check it out at handheldconf.com and grab your ticket from 10 a.m. UK time this, when is that? Friday, March 1st?
Yes.
Excellent. There's
a very nice video on there that I noticed that you feature in.
Do I?
Yes. Yes.
I've got used to hearing my own voice. Not that it's particularly pleasant, but seeing myself is something entirely different.
Right, yeah, you feature in it. It's milliseconds. I wouldn't worry.
It's probably too many milliseconds. But it was a great day and a great audience, and bigger and better this year. So definitely check that out. Actually, Craig is also the person who informed me that in certain circles, in certain slang, the Back to Front show could be considered rude.
Yes, I know. I was looking at Urban Dictionary only moments ago.
Yes, this really wasn't intentional. I would have been quite proud of myself in a way, had I thought of it, even though it is quite rude. But no, really Back to Front, meaning back-end technologies and front-end development. So if anyone comes up to you and says the phrase Back to Front, you can just know that they are a listener of this podcast.
Indeed.
Would you agree?
Yes, certainly.
And in other news, we've still not been picked up by the 5x5 network.
I think Dan might not be listening.
I don't know. What can we do? What can we do?
I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, we have reneged on every promise of regularity.
That's true.
Content. We're really not setting the best example. But
structure.
Structure. Yes. Actually, Joel Hughes, him of Port 80 Events, just tweeted me earlier saying... weekly, ha ha ha. I was like, sorry? He's like, well, at NA Conf, when I said, you're really going to manage it weekly, you looked at me like I was mad. Well, perhaps we take that back.
Yeah, I think so.
But anyways, moving swiftly on, We've got a few little sort of news nuggets to talk about, and then we're going to discuss later on paid for apps. This is kind of the theme of this week, sort of parting with money for online sort of content and or applications. I thought it'd be interesting to pick your brains on the ones that you sort of spend money on a regular basis and why, and I'll do the same. And then if anyone's listening has any other recommendations, then, you know, maybe we can discuss those in a following show.
Yeah, sounds good.
So I've got a couple of links that I've noticed sort of from the Twitter this week. And the first one is a website called nice.co, which is N-I-I-C-E.
Nice.co,
which is by Armstrong & Co. This is Chris Armstrong, based over in Belfast. Now, it's interesting because, I mean, that's quite a Twitter handle, really. And I know that he came in for a lot of abuse for his drug use during the 7 Tour de Frances that he partook in.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, but he deflected the abuse well and got back to his work as a fantastic web designer. He used to work at Design by Front over in Belfast, though, responsible for Typecast. Which has now obviously been acquired by Monotype. But it's a really nice little app. I just I clicked on the link, and effectively it's a search tool for currently Dribbble and Behance, however you say it. So you can type in, say, typography, and you'll get, you know, a whole sort of scrolling page full of, you know, dribbles. What do they call them? Dribbles?
Dribbles, yeah.
Dribbles, or, you know.
Just say, inspiration.
Yeah. And, you know, it's really quite addictive. You can certainly sort of spend more than a few minutes looking at that. Did you have a chance to check it out?
Yeah, I was just looking at buttons.
Buttons?
Yeah.
It was like coat buttons?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, as in interface.
Ah, very buttons. Good.
I was just trying to work out, you know, what its limitations were. It's pretty good. It's picked up, you know.
See, that's a developer in you, isn't it? I'm trying to work out what its limitations are. Instead of just enjoying it, you're picking it apart. Did you use, I bet you've used Source as well.
I haven't got the inspector out yet. But I should do. Hang on a sec.
It's only a matter of time. No, but seriously, you should check it out. It's it's a really nice sort of, you know, implementation. Looks great. And it'll be interesting to see where Chris and Co. Take that.
Yeah, I like its simplicity.
Hmm. Yeah, really nice. Really quick as well. I don't know if they're caching results or whatever, but really, really quite nice.
I like you can toggle on and off the sources as well. That's quite nice.
Yeah.
So you can say, I don't want anything from Dribbble because it's not giving me anything good or whatever.
Well, yeah, I'm sure they're going to add some more sources to that over time. But I guess both of those properties have quite nice API, so it makes sort of starting something like that quite easy. But definitely check it out, nice.co. The second one I had this week was also by another resident of Northern Ireland called Jordan Moore. I've enjoyed a lot of what he's written over sort of last couple of years, particularly around responsive web design, and some of his in his lab section. There's some great sort of demos in there of things like content choreography and using some of the most advanced or latest CSS techniques to shift content ordering around and stuff like that. And I noticed that he tweeted something the other day about he's kind of offering a membership to the site. And I thought this was really interesting. So you can basically pay, I think there's a couple of rates, I think £21 or £35, whatever it is, a year. The site and the content will still be free, but you're kind of supporting his writing and you get a couple of sort of extras, like extra tracks on an album or something like that.
Special features.
I think there's a newsletter and also a podcast. But you're sort of showing that you value what he does and the contribution he's making by sort of supporting it. I'm seeing a few more of these now, sort of other people talking about supporting their sort of blogs via maybe buying stuff through their A stores, their Amazon stores, so they get a few pence off the affiliate links and that kind of stuff for recommended books or music and that kind of stuff. What do you make of it all?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one because I've talked about this in the context of film with quite a few filmmakers and film companies as well, because, you know, there's this special features issue at the moment where, you know, special features used to be a reason to buy the DVD or the Blu-ray or whatever, and that's becoming increasingly not so important. And so they're looking for their version of this now, now that things like iTunes and Netflix and Hulu and everything are the top dog. So I think this is sort of similar to that in my mind anyway, in that you're saying, you know, I want to support you. I know that I'm going to get my content from you in other ways anyway, but you're going to give me, you know, a little bit extra yeah. for supporting you. I quite like it. You know, we've talked before about designing products that have sort of extra online features for you know, either for subscribers or for people who pay a little bit extra, and it's quite nice.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a really interesting concept. I guess there are other ways that people could do it, you know, like a Kickstarter campaign or maybe the more traditional advertising model where that's, you know, someone gets a lot of readers online and they can measure that in terms of RSS or subscribers to a newsletter, and then, you know, someone wants to come on and place an ad on the site. Obviously, the trade-off there is you have to keep up the you know, the regularity and everything for the clicks. And so it's kind of a balancing act in that respect. But no, I wish him all the best with it. I think it's a really interesting idea. I'm sure I'm going to pick one of those two later and subscribe, because I think, as he says in his blog post, you know, writing is hard and it does take time. And, you know, putting all those demos together, which we'll happily take the source code from and implement in client projects, is, you know, is time consuming, especially if you've got family, which I believe he does as well. So,
yeah, I think the one thing that I'd say, you know, having worked with a lot of publishers, the difference between this model and, say, advertising, something that a lot of the publishers I've worked with come up against, is this sort of conflict of interest issue with advertising, particularly if you're in the tech world. Well, actually, not just in the tech world, even if you're in the film world, whatever you're in, you know, if you're writing about a film and then that suddenly that production company wants to advertise with you, you've just slated their latest blockbuster, that becomes a problem. Whereas I think this model is a bit nicer. Well, from my perspective, you know, I would rather support people producing content in this way, just like I've always preferred to pay for a sort of high quality magazine, you know, like Sight and Sound or whatever it might be, Little White Lies, as opposed to, you know, buying stuff rammed full of adverts.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because obviously when we did Insights the Book, we approached a whole bunch of tech companies, but you know, in truth, we approached ones of companies that we liked or the products that we used, and you know, we didn't approach companies the products we maybe aren't fans of, or so on and so forth. So I think, you know, there are ways that you know, sitting on the other side of the fence, that you can approach advertising as well. So
I think also you very much weren't commenting on those things in that publication.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, you were interviewing people, which, you know, instantly, you know, lent itself to this sponsorship idea, you know, in rather than people sponsoring it and then you saying your app's rubbish or whatever. You might, you know, that wasn't the situation.
It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because there are a lot of blogs out there that have kind of, you know, say the Deck Advertising, which is the Deck Network, which is a great network run by Jim Koodle. And, you know, you don't know what ads you're going to get. You know, he has 20 or 30 advertisers on there, and a lot of these blogs are sort of commentary blogs as well. So I guess you have to take the rough with the smooth and just try your best. But I think it's interesting. I remember we were talking about this earlier today, that I think it was Jason Kotke years ago sort of decided that, you know, he was getting a lot of readership, and he said, yeah, if you want to support my blog and, you know, my writing and allow me to do it full time, you can sort of buy a membership. And I think this was going back sort of maybe 6-7 years, and he managed to do that. He got enough people pledging at that point. This is pre-Kickstarter and pre all this, you know, way of pledging that we've got now. And yeah. I think that sort of set him on the course to go and you know, do his blog full time. I think it's a really interesting thing, because it does take time. I mean, even, you know, for the 12 people who read my site occasionally, you know, a blog post will take, and I'm not bitter, honestly, a blog post will take, you know, an hour or two sometimes, especially if it's a technical one with code examples and that. So,
of course, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's, I guess the only limitation is how many blogs you can support. So if more people try it, we'll all have to draw the line somewhere once the wallet starts creaking. But yeah, all the best with that, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's the same thing with Kickstarter campaigns or crowdfunding campaigns in general. You know, I have that problem. I want to support a lot of filmmakers or a lot of web companies doing different things on Kickstarter, and it's hard because, you know, there's only so many per month that you can really support, or per year even.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I did, more than ever last year, I supported the Creative Mornings campaign. I bought my my little elasticated wallet, and a couple of magazines as well, to Tomorrow Magazine and maybe one more, I can't remember. Not that it was instantly forgettable, but my memory doesn't serve. So
but yeah, I think I did 9 or 10 actually last year. I think all but one was film. I think
We'll have to talk more about your experiences of Kickstarter in relation to the Open Indie Project on another show, because I think it's a topic close to your heart as well. So we'll slate that for a future episode. But what did you pick out this week? I notice you've got something from Mr. Wiggins, Richard Wiggins.
Yes, Richard Wiggins. Literally only a couple of hours ago, he tweeted this. I'm presuming this is either pronounced Myo. It's not M-Y-O. I'm presuming it's Myo.
Let's presume that, yeah.
Let's presume it's Myo for now. And this is gesture control.
Okay.
And it's an interesting project. I think there's been a couple of things recently about gesture control, particularly focusing on non-camera technology, so stuff that isn't camera-based. And this particular one, it basically measures the electrical activity in your muscles. So it's a band that goes around your arm, like a sweatband might, sort of just below your elbow. It seems to be demonstrated wearing it that way. And it allows you to control devices through gestures, and it measures the muscle activity in order to do that.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's pretty incredible to watch. There's a wonderful video on their site, which is just getmyo.com. And the video basically shows them controlling everything from iTunes. So the guy twists his hand as if he's twisting a volume control, and the volume goes down.
Wow.
Or there's a chap using a radio control helicopter with it.
This reminds me of... I don't know if you watch Dragon's Den. This few series been on in the UK, and I think it's sort of spread around the world. There were a couple of guys who came on, and they'd done something very, very similar, but with a wand. They sort of based it on...
Yes, on Harry Potter. I remember that.
And on Harry Potter. Yeah, it kind of reminds me, you're probably too young to remember, but there was a series back in the early 80s called Blake 7, and I think they had these kind of wristbands that allowed them to teleport. Kind of reminds me of that a little bit. according to Steve Wozniak, very cool and impressive. I hope this finds its way into our future soon.
Yeah, it's on pre-order, so if you want one, get one. They're $149, which I think is a bargain, and it's already... it already can interact with a whole bunch of stuff like macOS. I think the Xbox was on there. There's a couple of other things that they listed, games, consoles, that kind of thing. But there's also a developer API, and they're going to be releasing documentation for that soon. And that's what excited me, because I was thinking about all sorts of applications for it.
I don't know. I think you could get some very strange looks in your local coffee shop if you're kind of ordering your latte and then suddenly you're twisting your arm in a strange gesture, and suddenly your laptop Skypes someone or something or other.
One of the things I thought was funny was one of the questions and answers on there what if I accidentally activate something? And apparently there's some unique gesture that we don't do naturally that you have to do in order to tell the Myo that you're about to instruct it. So I don't know what that is, but
The mind boggles on that. You would look very strange. Yeah, could get yourself into a whole bunch of trouble. Someone in the queue, so you're looking at me funny. What are you doing that for?
Yeah, why are you pointing at me? Yeah,
I'm not. I'm merely using my Myo. And he's like, yeah, I'm sure some people will believe you and some others won't. But that looks really interesting. It seems relatively cheap. I mean, $149, probably what, about £90, 90 British pounds, something like that?
Yeah, 90, 80, something like that. Yeah, I think it's really impressive. I mean, I obviously haven't seen one in action, but from the video, I was really impressed.
Have you pre-ordered?
Not yet, but I will be.
You will be.
It says shipping late 2013. And I'm always a little bit... This is bringing this back to Kickstarter campaigns, actually. I'm always a little bit cautious about hardware when they say sort of, 12 months till you get it. And it says limited number available. So I'm not sure whether that means that it's limited number on pre-order or limited number period. But I'll probably pre-order at that price.
Did you ever receive your InstaCube?
No, I haven't yet. I don't know when that's meant to arrive.
Wasn't that one of the pre-order Kickstarter?
That's an example, yeah. So, and there was a lot of controversy around that in the comments section on Kickstarter, saying, for those who don't know, InstaCube is just basically it displays your Instagram feed, all your friends' Instagrams and stuff on a cube that sits on your desk.
So you'd have a lot of pictures of Whistler, your dog, and a lot of pictures of coffee from me.
Yeah, just constant pictures of latte art from you, basically. Yeah. Just the whole thing.
Actually, Maxwell, did you see the one Maxwell did the other day? He did a triple leaf thingy.
Was that on yours? I saw that, yeah. But yeah, so, I mean, that's a similar situation where people were like, is this ever actually going to ship? And I know there's another one called Digital Bolex that's been causing controversy because of that.
Bolex,
as in the Bolex cameras.
Ah, okay.
I've not no experience of hardware or industrial design, so I suspect it's very difficult to get something.
Sounded someone crash outside your house there. It sounded like
no. I think a boy racer was trying to prove his manhood.
Exactly. Only in Wales.
Only in Wales.
That's not strictly true, of course. No. Yes, it's an interesting one. I know from reading some of the blog posts around the the watch that went
Pebble,
yeah, and how the fact that they wanted a certain amount of money, they'd sort of geared themselves up for a certain amount of production, and obviously it went stellar, that it had a whole host of problems associated with upscaling the production. I think that's one of the interesting things, and again, we should discuss this on another episode about Kickstarter, that you are allowed to exceed your the amount that you ask for. But
I think it's gone beyond allowed as well. There are stretch goals, so people are like, they put in their copy, you know, we need a minimum of 30,000, but you know, our stretch goal is 120,000.
There's even a term for it, the stretch goal. I like
that. There is, yeah. And I think, you know, again, it's something for another episode, but I think there's problems there,
Definitely. Well, let's chalk that up for maybe the next one or the one after that, because I think there's a whole bunch of chat there.
Exactly.
Moving on, something about VHX. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so VHX is something pretty close to my heart, actually. Well, at least they're, what they're doing is very close to my heart. People who know me know that I work a lot with film companies and doing more so. And VHX are a company who are basically established because they feel that artists should make more money from their work. And there's loads and loads of digital download sites out there. But what they're doing is they're doing something a little bit different. It's for the first time, it's sort of, to me, it feels like they have the right philosophy.
Okay.
And I've spoken to them quite a lot, the guys behind it, Jake and Casey, and they're former Vimeo guys.
Oh, right, yeah.
And they...
What were they doing there? Are they founders or some of the developers?
They're engineering.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I think they came across VHX as a true replacement for what they used to see with VHS, where, you know, you'd find the sort of discovery element of it. You find a film that you liked, and then the film would be available to be able to access at any video store. Whereas, you know, this new world of film with downloads, etc., everything's very restricted, and you know, it might be available on one platform and not on another. And what they're trying to encourage is DRM-free downloads, no geo-blocking, bundling special features, all these things that, you know, have disappeared as a result of things like iTunes.
Right, yeah, interesting.
And obviously they're giving a huge chunk back to the filmmaker, which never happened before. But they've got some really high-profile films, so you know, just thought people should check it out. So things like Indie Game the Movie is on there, and Dave Grohl's Sound City on there, and We Are Legion, which is the Anonymous film. So there's a bunch of, you know, interesting stuff they're putting through there, and I think, you know, they're not open to any filmmaker right now. I think they're being selective. Some really interesting stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting there. I think Miami Connection, that looks a good one. That looks at My Street. That's interesting. Indie Game, of course, is harking back. Isn't that the Kickstarter funded film as well?
Yeah, so Indie Game, I think, went for two Kickstarter campaigns. They did a campaign to actually make the film, and then one to market and distribute and finish it, I think. So there was, you know, color grading and stuff they paid for through a second campaign. There's lots of these guys who are using these sort of technologies entirely to produce and distribute their film, and completely avoiding the old-fashioned route.
It's interesting, isn't it? So basically, VHX they create websites? Is it a platform? What exactly is it?
Yeah, so it is a platform, but what they do is they create something completely not VHX branded. So, you know, it's not like you're going to iTunes and you're browsing an Apple branded environment. This is, you go to their filmmaker's domain name, or you go to a subdomain of the filmmaker's site. So let's say Indie Game, you go to buy.indiegamethemovie.com.
Got you.
There is an option there to buy it. It's a flat fee, and you get a streaming version of it, and you get a download, and that download's DRM free, so you can move it around to any device that you have, play it with any player you want to play it with. It's actual true ownership, and I think DRM is pretty anti-consumer, and this is a step in the right direction away from that.
I think I'm about to drop $12.99 on this Sound City by Dave Grohl. It looks
I think it's a good buy, actually.
An exhilarating look at making rock and roll for a living, or something like that. They actually faded out just as I was about to read the quote, which the wonders of modern technology. Yeah, that's interesting. I know we've talked about it in the past in relation to some of the things you're doing, but I haven't really checked it out hugely. But that's an interesting. I think it's obviously a problem that needs to be solved, and I know from chatting to you that there's a few options out there, different ways people are doing it and approaching it. And I certainly know that selling digital goods now, it's relatively cheap to do. I mean, speaking personally, we use a thing called Fetch App, which delivers basically PDFs and things like that and ebooks. But there's a whole bunch of, Gumroad's an interesting option as well, which allows you to sell digital goods in their
Gumroad's
original.
Lovely user experience as well.
I bought, and I know I'm going to say it wrong, is it Boixmoind?
Boixmoind, yeah.
Yeah, there you go, through that. And yeah, it was very, I only bought it because you did the honourable thing, would not let me copy it.
Well, there you go, you see. So that's the proof there that something DRM-free doesn't necessarily get shared.
Yes. And obviously I wouldn't have watched it had you given it me. I would have felt too guilty for Gareth.
Obviously,
anyway.
Yeah.
But that's an interesting one. Yeah, so VHX.tv.
Yes.
Excellent. So we're about halfway through, so I thought it's time to discuss the competition. Your opportunity to win a ticket to the conference day at Handheld. That's handheldconf.com. And as I said earlier, we have completely over-engineered this. Have we not?
Just slightly.
Yeah. We talked about doing random generation database lookups, all sorts of things. But in the end, let's go a little bit old school. And it's a completely at our discretion as well, so you're going to have to trust us that we will find something funny. But effectively, what you need to do, if you'd like to win a ticket, is tweet us at Back to Front Show with your reason why you would like to attend the Handheld Conf in November. And if you put the hashtag #HandheldConf on there as well, we will pick what we consider to be the funniest. And, we're pretty funny people, so it better be really good. The most amusing will win, and we will announce that, I think, on Thursday at midday. So, if you're the only person to enter, you're probably going to win. So, let's try and have a few funny ones in there. And
that'd be good.
We will announce it on our Twitter accounts, the At Back to Front Twitter account, mine and yours, Kieran.
Yes, sound good? That's fine,
at
yeah.
Midday on, that's midday GMT this Thursday.
Thursday the what?
Thursday the what? What is Thursday? 28th.
28th, yeah.
I will actually be on a train going to Responsive Day Out.
So I'll announce it then, shall
I? So you will announce it. This is good, yeah. Kieran will announce it. Very good stuff. make it funny, and we look forward to reading those. So whilst I was doing the show notes and discussing these ideas of sort of paid for memberships and that kind of stuff, I started sort of totting up in my head what I pay out on a monthly basis for sort of web apps, web apps.
Did it scare you?
No, not so much.
That's good.
It's not as bad as it could be. okay. So just off the top of my head, I annually pay for Flickr, and have done. That's the probably seventh or eighth year I've done Flickr this year. Okay. And that's probably the longest subscription I've had for anything, actually. I also use Harvest, which is an invoicing app. I've used that for the last two or three years, mainly for my personal projects and client work and that kind of stuff. But for Viewport Industries, we use Xero, which is X-E-R-O, Xero.com, for accounting. And we've also taken out a subscription for latest projects with Basecamp Personal. So that's yeah, it's one-off fee, $25, and yeah, we're using that for something we're working on for the summer. So that's pretty much my my bunch, and the main reason for those, most of them are sort of, I mean, Flickr I've just had, and I have photos on there. You never lose them if you don't resubscribe, but it's just kind of a legacy thing. I've no problem renewing that. But Harvest and Zero and Basecamp are all sort of business related. Mm-hmm. I'm fortunate that Adam allows me to use Codebase annually for free, which is very kind of him. Adam Cook at Atech Media, so I use that for my Git repositories as well. So, but yeah, I'm just interested to talk to you a little bit about the ones that you use and maybe some of the decisions that you make and what makes you want to, you know, pay for a service, because it does seem to be the nirvana to try and create an app that has regular subscription.
And it certainly does, yeah. I mean, I think that seems to be the, you know, the goal of almost everyone I meet at a conference, is to create something that someone's willing to pay $9 a month for, or even $30 a year or whatever.
Yeah, I think because mainly you can model it, can't you? You can work out, you know, if I have 1,000 users, I have an annual income here, or if I have 2,000 with a churn of 10%, this is how it could go and what you can spend on marketing and that. But first, before we discuss all that, why don't you let us know some of the things that you pay for, because I think they're quite different to me.
Yeah, they are. And I think, first of all, I use Gauges for stats.
Which is really sweet, actually, yeah.
It is. And that was, I paid for that purely because of its simplicity.
Right.
So they were mind-blowingly simple in comparison to Google Analytics. Mm. And that's why I went with them. GitHub, obviously, I pay for. Well, not obviously, actually, because obviously you don't. But GitHub is something that I pay for.
So which plan do you have? I know you.
I can't remember. I had an organization, and then I've switched to, I think I've got, 20 repositories or something like that. 20 wow. private repositories or something. So it's a fair chunk. I recently had a conversation actually with Neil from Mixture about this and how it can quickly get out of control, because you've got client repositories in there, and obviously they need to be private, and obviously you need to keep them, you know, they're taking up one repository space on your paid GitHub account, so it can get expensive.
Yeah, interesting.
And then Free Agent, I use Xero, I use Free Agent, which I'm actually really happy with. And at one point I had two accounts with them for a different business. and their service is just wonderful. And you ask a question and, you know, they're instantly there on Skype or Twitter or whatever. And, it's just really, I'm really impressed by them.
Yeah. Just to butt in, if I may, it's really interesting. I've never heard a bad word against Free Agent. I think they do. You know, they've done an amazing job over the years, and Rowan and the gang up there do fantastic work. And principally, you know, the reason I don't use it personally is mainly because when I started freelancing, just wanted an invoicing app. I didn't have an all singing or dancing, you know, account really. I had 3 or 4 clients.
Right.
It made sense.
Harvest, right?
Yeah, and then the reason we use Xero for Viewport Industries is mainly because Elliot was familiar with it. And the accountant that we chose to use is also a certified expert, which means that he can log in, go and pull out our VAT reports and kind of just ask the questions. And it makes his life very simple. So it was...
It's interesting.
That was the reason that that we went with Xero. Plus they have bank fees, which I know are now coming to Free Agent, which basically means overnight all your transactions get pulled in and you can reconcile and so forth. So it's... It was almost, you know, familiarity of the other people involved that meant we went down the Xero route. But Free Agent, I think, is an amazing product.
And yeah, that's interesting, actually, because Free Agent was, the reason we chose our accountant is actually for the same reason, because they were Free Agent, you know, familiar. So they're happy to log in and do stuff there as well. So I think it's interesting people are picking their accountants these days based on, you know, the web app they use.
Yeah, Free Agent friendly. Yeah, no, I think it's an interesting point. You know, when you've got decent turnover, the cost of these apps becomes negligible, and the time saving, you know, just increases. And especially if the people that you work with on your financial stuff, like your accountant or your tax expert or whatever, know what they're doing with those apps, it's a kind of a no brainer.
Yeah.
But I know that Free Agent, they actually, don't they have trained accountants on staff, you were telling me once?
Yeah, they do, yeah. I mean, I think it's Dial M for Accounts or something on Twitter.
Brilliant.
She works for Free Agent, and I think she's answered a couple of questions of mine, just, you know, on Twitter, you know, you see Free Agent and she replies. It's really, you know, good to know they've got them on staff.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. So which other apps do you pay for?
Right, so there's Google Apps.
Ah, interesting. Now,
which I know that a lot of people don't pay for, but I do.
Well, I think now moving forward, if you want to use Google Apps for Business, you have to pay, don't you?
If you want, if you're a new subscriber.
Yeah.
So I was having this conversation with Cole.
Mr. Henley.
Mr. Henley, 007.
007.
And I think if you, it only applies if you're a new subscriber. Excuse me. So I think anyone who's previously had a business account, that's fine. You'll always have that. Or at least they might be reviewing it in the future or something. But for now, it's free still.
Interesting.
But anyone moving forward has to pay. And the simple reason that I paid is that two or three of my clients had some very bad experiences where they were locked out of their account and couldn't get support. One was just having issues with MX records when we could sort it, but the other was properly locked out, like it was a security problem, like it'd been hacked, and of course they couldn't get support.
Interesting. Yeah, you don't think about that necessarily when you sign up and trust your business email to Google.
Yeah, and I thought to myself, you know, this is really the number one form of communication. I mean, I know we had this conversation before that we're sort of tied to our inbox all day. And I think that because of that, I just felt that I don't know what it is, I think it's $9 a month,
yeah,
at least for the account I've got.
That's quite a lot. You're looking at, what, $118 a year?
Yeah, something like that.
Which, and, yeah, it's not too bad, I suppose.
Well, the thing is, you know, I've got three. Well, I haven't got my mail open at the moment, but I've normally got three tabs open at any time. You know, Docs, calendar, and mail.
Yeah, it's true.
And I don't buy Word. I've got Open Office installed, but you know, I use it every day of my life, and I think, you know, I want to pay them for that, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, well, obviously you get something in return, and not only the apps, but you get that warm, fuzzy feeling of support. And have you ever had to use it? Has it worked?
The support? Oh, yeah, I have used support. I can't remember what I was doing. I think we changed from a .co domain to a .com.
Oh, yeah, I remember
this, yeah. We bought the .com, and for the life of me, I couldn't work out how to change a primary domain, and you have to go through support to do it.
Interesting.
So, yeah, that's what I did. And the final thing that I wanted to mention that I've got a subscription to is Railscasts.
Interesting. So we're talking content here.
Yeah. So this is a bit different. I mean, I know the subject was apps, but I wanted to mention it because it was something that I make a point of paying for. I basically learnt Rails, or I learnt Ruby and Rails, through Ryan Bates's Railscast.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched a few in the past, and they're fantastic. He's got a really, you know, a great knack of presenting and making things seem relatively straightforward, even if you're not familiar with them. So, I always thought they were free, though. Are they not free anymore? Or is this a special option?
It is a special option. There are a lot of free videos. I can't remember how exactly he did it. I think he might have done something like core subjects.
I noticed
things like objects, for example. You know, like his videos on objects are free, but then I can't remember exactly how he split it up. But there are some that are paywalled.
Right. Okay. Interesting.
And that happened, I can't remember how long ago now. Probably a year ago now. And I think it's his full time gig, if I'm not mistaken. I think he is Railscast now. And that's another reason why I pay for it, because, you know, he's got a job out of it, you know, and I would stick my neck out and say it's the best tuition site out there.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, there seems to be a prevalence of sort of online tutorial and video sites popping up. I remember years ago, Peep Code was one of the first ones I ever came across.
Oh, yeah.
Jeffrey Groschenbach Mm-hmm. I probably said that wrong. And I've bought a couple of those. I actually bought one by Dan Benjamin on Sinatra, the kind of Ruby DSL type, I guess, is it framework, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And that was, it was so nicely done, you know, broken down into chapters with the code examples. And I think you were talking like $20 or something like that. It's But now I think more and more people are trying to forge out this subscription model for the obvious reason, really. You know, if you can get a user in, it's kind of like the gym membership, isn't it? It's like you get it every month, and if the person doesn't use it, it doesn't matter until that sort of 10th month when they realize they're not using it, they cancel. I think one of the first sort of revenue sort of charging apps I ever came across was Basecamp. I mean, they're still going. They're kind of like, what, maybe 8 years old now, Basecamp, something like that?
I think obviously probably older than that, yeah.
And they built a huge successful app business from that. So, but you do see a lot of apps and subscription-based apps that you just kind of wonder sometimes, why would I pay for this, you know? I think sometimes they try and solve problems that maybe aren't there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in going back to content, I think it's really interesting because you pay for Railscast and I've bought Peep Code and things like that. I think, you know, when you can show a value and, you know, you give a little bit away, show how good you are, the quality, whether that be your writing or your film or you know, tutorial videos, and then you have the sort of paywall behind it. That does seem to be working. Maybe it's just in our world in tutorial stuff, but I know some of the newspapers try that approach as well, don't they?
Yeah, I think it's obviously hard with things like news because, you know, news is coming out of every, you know, outlet possible, isn't it? It could be your friends on Twitter, it could be somebody on Facebook, it could be the BBC. Obviously, who are giving away for free and, you know, will never charge in that paywall way ever. So, you know, there's always going to be a source for news. But in terms of education, I think that there's a real, you know, I don't want to say need, but there's a real, you know, opportunity there to charge for really good quality content.
Mm.
And I think the other thing with education in our sphere is that that content needs to be revised. And
yeah.
Ryan actually, you know, I think, let me just see. I remember I read this on his site. It's saying, you know, for the pro members, for people who are subscribed, they get revised content.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the problem, isn't it? You know, Rails has been worked on all the time. And,
yes.
And I don't know how often Ruby gets a sort of refresh, as it were, but I know Rails...
Again, it's being worked on all the time.
So something that you produced 6 months ago that someone's paid for, if they're picking that up now, then it will be out of date. This, you know, that in a sense, it's a unique problem to our industry that the technology moves so fast and, you know, techniques and thinking changes that you have to really, A, know your stuff, be good at presenting, and be refreshing your content for new subscribers.
And that is incredibly time consuming, you know.
Yeah.
I can't believe what Ryan built up in his spare time. Ryan Bates, yeah. This is on Railscast. I can't believe what he built up in his spare time because I think he was a full-time employed developer. And then has only recently done it full-time.
Yeah, I'm just checking out the site now. There's huge amounts of stuff on there, aren't there?
It's ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, and the other thing I quite like is that you sign in through your GitHub account.
Oh, nice.
So sort of tie in there. That's how you sort of single sign on via that.
Oh, that's interesting. That's Are you built? You're not built via GitHub, are you?
I don't know how he builds. I think it might be the wonderful Stripe.
Stripe. One day it shall come to these shores. But not anytime soon. Yeah, it's interesting. I think... you know, if you look back at where you were maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I think we both probably spend a lot more on you know, web application subscriptions than we ever did. But I think increasingly, who am I, Jonathan Ross? Increasingly, the utility value you get back is increasing as well. So I think
review it every now and again.
Yeah, I mean, I think
I do go through and say, am I actually using this?
I think as well, when you actually work out. As developers, are always like, oh, I could build this. But when you actually think, you know, is it worth me spending 6 weeks building something that I could spend $30 on a month, you know? And the answer invariably is no.
Yeah, and, you know, to be honest, you know, you're never going to build free agent, you know, for yourself anyway. And actually, there are things you can't buy, like Railscast. You can't buy that education. You can't build it yourself, I mean.
Yeah.
So you can buy that. You have to buy that in. So I think it's important that it doesn't get out of control, because I know people who've got, you know, huge sums leaving their account every month.
I know, it's crazy. Yeah, but, just looking at Railscast, he's done 407 episodes. I mean, that's covering everything. That's pretty impressive. I don't know of any other language or technology that's got a series like this. Do you? And then if you've got PHP?
There is, but I mean, I imagine there's something for the Python people and something for the PHP people, but I'm not sure that it's... on this scale, or indeed, again, sticking my neck out, but indeed this quality. I think the quality is the thing that's the key here. And when I was learning Rails, just, you know, coming across these videos and everything I Googled seemed to have R-Bait attached to it. And I was like, who's this R-Bait? And they all linked back to Railscast.
No, it's brilliant. Excellent. Well, if you think of any more, we can always add them to the show notes or chat about them in the future.
Yeah, cool.
A future episode. But finally this week, honestly, we've had fixed gear bikes, we'll probably have a feature on, like, you know, mustache wax in coming weeks. Plaidmaker.com.
yes.
Now if you go to any Brooklyn-based web event and you're not
any web event, let's be honest,
and you know, you're not there in your skinny jeans and your plaid shirt, you do stick out slightly. So I thought, well, it'd be interesting. What if I wanted to send my website plaid? Could I? Could I get a nice repeating background? And you can make your own on plaidmaker.com.
You can.
You're looking at it now, aren't you? You're thinking.
I am looking at it now. And yeah. I'm just thinking, I've got that shirt.
I know. I actually confessed to buying a plaid shirt the other day, in knowing full well that you would be how should I phrase this politely, ripping the proverbial out of
yes
obviously with the top button done up and the mustache wax. But if you do need a repeating background, then Plaidmaker is the place to go, I think, for your hipster inspired personal blog.
It's quite technical as well. I didn't realize how technical plaid got.
Yeah, I mean, there's apparently these vertical and horizontal axes that you can repeat.
I know, on various, it's mental.
Impressive. I don't think you can top that, but I'll give you the opportunity to top Plaidmaker.com next week on the app finder section.
I was impressed by the stack, the full stack that he describes that he's using. You know, Python, Django, PIL, Bootstrap, jQuery, Backbone, and
you see, I mean, it just shows.
That Plaidmaker.com requires this kind of technology.
Oh, look, Sean, Plaidmaker, great mustache. See?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, de facto glasses.
He actually always says on here he also loves mustaches.
Uh-huh.
Hold on.
You haven't just clicked the mustache link, have you?
Stashist.com.
Stashist.com.
I think I've topped myself, not literally. This.
for that first picture.
This is something. I'm sure I've seen that guy. He looks familiar.
Probably around Bath.
Yeah, is that the... No. There's some serious mustaches going on here.
There's some impressive ones here.
No, silence on a podcast is not good, but I am literally...
Silence from looking at moustaches on a podcast is even worse.
I think on that note, all I have left to say is don't forget to enter our competition for winning your ticket to the handheld conference.
Yes, how do I do that again?
All you have to do is at us on Twitter, at Back to Front Show, and give us your reason, the funnier the better, for why you would like to attend the handheld conference. And Kieran will be announcing the winner on Twitter. Midday UK time this Thursday the 28th. And finally, huge thanks to Handheld for sponsoring the show. And you know, we've 4 episodes in and we're still not committing to a schedule, but we will be back soon. Hopefully you're enjoying it, and if you have any feedback, feel free to email me at kia, that's KEIR, @backtofrontshow.com. Thanks for listening.
Cheers.